latest episode of Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today's also your host, Evan Sider. I'm joined by a very special guest today's show, Jackson Frank, who does great work on the NBA, NBA draft, and also recently adopted Suns fans, feel like, Jax, because a lot of Suns fans have enjoyed your content. You've enjoyed watching the Suns team so far. Somehow, some way, Jax, and this Suns team, after today's win over the Philadelphia 76ers, 130-117, it was mostly the 76ers reserves because Embiid, Simmons, Horford, Josh Richardson, Tobias Harris all did not play in this game. Still impressed to say, Jackson, this Suns team, it's been a very long time coming. They are now 7-0 in the bubble and really getting huge national attention right now.
Yeah, for sure. I think this is what their best win percentage for a season since that 48 win year back in, I think, 13-14. I may be off by exactly what year that was. But yeah, they've been impressive. You know, you can say, yeah, it's the shorthanded Sixers, but other teams they're vying against have been the beneficiary of teams resting. The Blazers certainly have benefited a lot from that. Sounds cliche, but all you can do is play the team in front of you, play the guys that you are on the court. So the Suns are getting the job done, and obviously I don't really think it matters that today's game came against a shorthanded team because they've beaten the Clippers at base, not full strength, but beating the Clippers with Kawhi and PG on the floor. So, been a really impressive run, and is fun to watch regardless of the outcome. Obviously, Suns fans would like to see it end in a play-in game, but I think regardless, there's a lot of optimism around this team now, and it's mostly justified.
Let me ask you, Jackson, you've watched a lot of these Suns games so far throughout the bubble. I know you tweeted this a couple times, too. Just how fun is it to see this team improve, but also from an aesthetic standpoint on both ends of the court? Just it seems like, from our point of view, Monty Williams has his team ready to go, and they're so fun to watch, honestly.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed them, watching them all year. I mean, especially when that starting five is together mostly that kind of that core four of Rubio, Booker, Ayton, and McHale. I know they just inserted Cam Johnson into the starting lineup once the bubble began. But yeah, that entire starting five, especially offensively, is really cohesive. You've got your floor spacers and McHale and Cam. I know McHale's jumper's been up and down, but he's been really good recently. I think overall in the bubble, his numbers are good from three. You've got your dominant ball on ball guy and creator and scorer and Devin Booker, and then you've got your role man and someone you can kind of use as a release valve at times in the post to create his own offense and Ayton. And then you've got this awesome playmaker and awesome decision maker who can kind of probe and find his way and is smart off the ball as a cutter and a screener and all that, and Ricky Rubio. So I've loved watching them offensively. You talked about Monty Williams. Their offense is really well done. It's creative, lots of movement, screening. Guys execute hard. They're crisp with their movements. So I've really enjoyed kind of watching the offense with a starting five that works really well together.
Hey, let me ask you about that starting five. Like you mentioned, Devin Booker, of course, is doing some serious damage in this bubble so far. It might be the bubble MVP if the Suns end up finishing 8-0. He's averaging 31 points, 6.1 assists, and 5 rebounds per game while carrying nearly 50% from the field at 49.7%. But what do you think about the two players alongside Booker and Ayton here with Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges? I was on yesterday with Max of the 7 Seconds or Less podcast talking to him about what I think is the long-term maybe future of this team at the 3 and 4 with Mikal and Cam Johnson. These are two low-usage guys that work so well together. It's almost like Cam is the offense-first guy who's really a lot better defender than we expect. And Mikal is maybe a future All-NBA player with an upside on offense that seems limitless too when he gets going on offense. What's your overall thoughts so far seeing these two play together?
Yeah, they just fill the gaps really well around Booker and Ayton. They're really smart off-ball players offensively. Mikhail's obviously a really good cutter, and he's a really good relocator in terms of filling the open spaces around the arc. So when his jumper's on, that's valuable. Cam is a really quick decision maker, obviously an awesome and versatile shooter, can shoot spot-ups off screens, really quick and fluid release. And then defensively, yeah, you know, Mikhail basically takes any assignment that the Suns throw at him. You know, he's had games where he's, you know, against the Mavs last week, he was guarding Luka for long stretches, but he was switched on to Porzingis at times. He's guarded LeBron and AD at different times against the Lakers this year. And so his ability to be a really, really good on and off ball defender is super valuable. So I've loved watching these two. Cam's been awesome as well, especially in the bubble. He's had a really nice rookie year all season, but it seems like in the bubble, he just really fits well around these four guys who are just very good basketball players. And you add a really, really good shooter in Cam to a starting five like that, or a starting four without Cam, and you've got a really, really solid base. So you have to be pretty optimistic and encouraged by those two's performance through their first three combined seasons and what they've done in the bubble in these key games is further reinforcing that belief in their long-term fit in Phoenix.
Real quick on Cam Johnson, Jax, because I mean, watching him in North Carolina, I imagine you saw the same. He really wasn't a great defender at all, but throughout this bubble so far, we've seen him get switched on a couple of times to some star players, and he's held his own pretty well, forced a couple steals, pickpocketing Malcolm Brogdon in that Indiana game, helped swing the momentum back in the Suns' favor in that one. What's been your impressions of Cam Johnson's defense, not only through the bubble, but throughout this year, where he's definitely exceeded expectations, and it's really a hopeful growing thing for the long term?
Yeah, I think what I've been most impressed with is I already knew he was a pretty good off-ball defender. I was actually talking with someone earlier today, yesterday, and I found my kind of write-up on him when I did my big board. And I complimented his off-ball D, but I was pretty critical of his on-ball D. And I've been impressed with his on-ball D. You know, there are times where he gets bullied. He's just not quite big enough to guard some of those star guys. But he's really well-positioned. It seems like he moves his hips better now and can change directions better than he did at UNC. I think he might have had some surgery over the offseason that last year that helped there. I'm not positive, but he just moves better. So I'm impressed with kind of the way he positioned himself to defend drives. I just was able to stop some guys that didn't really anticipate being the case, at least early on in his career. So, yeah, the defense has really impressed me overall. Obviously, was already good off the ball, but some of those on-ball sequences throughout the year have been impressive. I know he had one against LeBron when they played the Lakers. I don't know which game it was. I was rewatching it recently. He had a really nice play against LeBron on the ball. So, yeah, it's definitely been kind of, I think, the biggest area of surprise for me and one reason he's been a pretty dang solid rookie this year.
Moving on to Devin Booker now, Jackson, because obviously he's on fire right now. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, 31 points per game, helping the Suns be 7-0 in the bubble so far. But what have you seen from Booker where it seems like he's taken that leap to true superstardom right now?
Yeah, I think it's funny. You know, he's been so awesome in the bubble. Obviously, his scoring is elevated a little bit, and I think his turnovers are down a little bit compared to the entire year. But for the most part, like, this is just like kind of who Devin Booker is, right? I mean, he's been this 26-7-4 guy for a couple of years now. I know his efficiency really took a leap this year in terms of true shooting. But what's been most impressive is the way he's operated in the clutch. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was obviously dynamite against the Clippers last week. Hit the game winner, but also hit that shot from the elbow on the right side to give the Clippers a lead, or to give the Suns a lead before needing that game-winning fadeaway on that hectic sequence. But he hit that big three against Miami on that kind of that delayed Spain pick and roll play from the top of the key. Miami kind of screwed it up, but he was wide open for three and he nailed it. And just kind of the way he's able to stay calm in these moments, you know, he's obviously not as good as Luka, but you contrast with someone like Luka who's really struggled in the clutch all year. And that hasn't been the case with Booker in these huge games. He continues to – he's steady. He makes the right read. He doesn't force shots. He's obviously an incredibly gifted, tough shot maker. But he's – you know, if there are four guys on him and Cam Johnson's wide open, on the strong side wing, he's making that read. He's trusting his teammates. So some of it seems cliche, but it really is him just showing that he's capable of being the on-ball engine in these key moments and making the proper decisions.
It doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair. Everyone needs support to make it through the day. Luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints and convenient, easy-to-use roller or shareable squeeze tube. CBD Recover combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like Arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need where it matters most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBDMD has to offer, they're offering our listeners 25% off your next order when you use promo code MBA at checkout. Once more, it's promo code MBA at checkout at CBDMD.com for your purchase of your superior CBD oil products from CBDMD, the best CBD products on the open market.
Where would you rate Booker, Jackson? I mean, I hate to put you on the spot here, but as far as being one of the just true basket scorers in the NBA, like, is he a top five, top three overall like shot creator for you right now?
I would say he's definitely top 10. I think top five, I would definitely entertain it. The way he's refined his scoring package over the duration of he's in his fifth year now. Correct me if I'm off, but yeah, I would consider him. I mean, I would still put one healthy Steph and KD above him, but obviously they're not in the bubble. I think Dame has just a little bit of a leg up. I know Dame isn't quite the finisher, maybe the mid-range scorer, but I think that pull-up three game is so key. You saw what he did today. You saw what he did on Tuesday against the Mavericks. So I would probably move him top five, though. He's incredibly efficient across the board. He's a great finisher with either hand. He's able to get to the rim so easily now with his change of pace and handle. awesome mid-range touch, can rise over the top of guys and just drop in buckets from the elbows or even the post. And it seems like he's getting more comfortable every year being kind of that deep pull-up guy you see with Steph and Dame, which really can kind of bend the defense and force them to pick you up farther out and just make things easier for the rest of your team. So, yeah, I would say kind of conservatively top 10, but if I really thought in depth about it, top 5 wouldn't be out of the realm, or wouldn't be out of the conversation for sure. So I'll say top 7, kind of split the difference right now, but really, really talented scorer, and I think top 5 this year for sure, with guys like Steph and KD being injured or sidelined for most of it.
Jackson, I mean, this Suns fans have known this for a couple of years now, but I think finally on this national stage, many are realizing this too, that I think Devin Booker's offensive game and really his overall mentality is built for a playoff atmosphere. And the Suns, really, their playoffs started from game one against the Wizards in late July, when they had to go 8-0 to even have a chance of being in this playing game. They still have to need help from the Grizzlies if they lose to the Bucks, or if the Blazers lose to the Nets on Thursday and the Suns win over the Mavericks on Thursday too. They still need to get a couple dominoes to fall here and there. But do you think Booker's game, just seeing these kind of games, kind of solidify that he is a player that should do well in playoff atmospheres?
Yeah, I think so. I think because what I also think is a little bit underrated about Booker, I know some, you know, throughout the years, you know, there's been questions, but he's really good off the ball too. That's something I've always been impressed with for at least 2 or 3 years now. Smart cutter, can shoot off movement off of screens, just knows kind of how to get to his spots. I've liked how the Suns have used him off the ball at times this year, kind of getting him into the post, getting him at the elbows, not necessarily having him initiate every possession from the top of the key. So I would say, yeah, if they make the playing game and then they win once or twice or whatever it requires. I guess it'd be twice, right? Can they get the 8 seed, or
yeah,
are they locked in? Okay.
If they get the
8 seed and then they win that game and then they face the Lakers, I would love to watch Booker, you know, do his thing, and I would be confident in him maintaining this level of play because of his versatility offensively, and isn't really a guy you can really flummox at this point anymore. You know, I think a couple of years ago, double teams were a huge part of, you know, his figuring. Yeah, that was a part he had to navigate. You know, there's the running meme up with Joakim Noah last summer, but really seems to have handled those better nowadays, more patient, better reading the floor, finding the best available path or outlet. Like I said, you can't really like funnel him to the rim to these dominant rim protectors because he's an awesome finisher too. You can't switch smaller guys on him because he's long had this really good post game for a guard. So yeah, I think he's someone who's built for the playoffs, and I hope we get the chance to see that come to fruition this season.
Yeah, just for those wondering out there, the Suns can still get the 8 seed if the Blazers lose and the Grizzlies lose to the Bucks on Thursday. That means the Suns would be hosting the playing game. But if one of those things did not happen, the Suns will be the 9 seed in that scenario. So definitely a lot still up in the air from the Suns' point of view here. But as well, Jackson, I know this is something that we've hit on a lot in the bubble too, and throughout the years of Booker continuing to be a better playmaker, but how surprised have you been just how good Devin Booker is now as a true facilitator, where at the start of his career in Phoenix, he really was just a scorer, a one-dimensional type of offensive player. But you see, just it continues to blossom every single year, Jackson. He's averaging 6 assists per game in the bubble so far, 6.5 throughout the season so far, and his turnovers have gone down too. Do you think in the future we could see maybe the final evolution of Devin Booker being like a James Harden type player, being a primary facilitator, a pseudo point guard surrounded by wings, so to say, or just what's been your impression on his playmaking ability and maybe the final outcome of Booker as a playmaker?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the playmaking growth is really impressive. I think it goes to show you how valuable scoring gravity is. You know, I've touched on in this pod and throughout the years how good of a scorer he is. And because he's a threat from anywhere, you know, teams, and he's 6'5", 6'6", whatever he is, the high release point, teams have to respect that. And he's become better and better every year of leveraging that into creating open shots for his teammates. And what's been most impressive to me, in the bubble at least, is he's really cut down on the sloppy turnovers. I think that's long been something he needs to improve on. You know, he's just kind of sloppy with some lobs, some pick and roll reads. You know, he just won't quite be focused, and the ball will be out of a teammate's clutches, or the ball fall out of his hands, and it'll be a turnover. But really haven't seen that very often in the bubble, which has been really, really key to me. So I think that would be kind of the next step for him, is to continue to cut down on that sloppiness. Which it seems like he's already taken the next step, but just, you know, I don't want to be too cliche, but just that possession in, possession out, you know, you know, always being aware and not kind of lollygagging through a read. Because I think he is someone who, while he's improved his kind of manipulation and proactive nature as a playmaker, he's someone who mostly is still reactive. And he's really good. He can make a lot of really, really impressive reads based off that, off of how the defense plays him. But you just can't really afford to be sloppy when you're not someone who's really, at any point you can't afford to be sloppy. But I think that's kind of where his next step would be. I would be hesitant to say he can be as good as James Harden offensively. I think Harden just has a little bit more creativity as a passer, but definitely kind of someone you're talking about as a top three, top five offensive player by the time Booker reaches his peak, which could be 3 or 4 years from now still.
Yeah, which is crazy to say, he's still only 23 years old. And he actually passed the Suns franchise mark today of the most career 30-point games in Suns franchise history at 23 years old. Walter Davis did it in 400 more games than Booker did, which just goes to show you just how insane of a scorer he is. But I'm excited to talk to you, Jax, about this next player, a former 76er and one who I think has finally found a perfect role for himself off the bench, and that's Dario Saric. He's averaged 14.6 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists per game in the bubble, shooting 50% from 3 so far over the 7-game stretch for the Suns. Been a vital piece to them too, Jackson. I think they're probably 500 or less if Dario does not play the way he's doing it right now. Do you love the role that Dario's in off the bench? Maybe he's kind of found like a home there as a backup center or a backup 4 or 5 who can give you like 20, 25 minutes on the bench every night and just abuse second units?
Yeah, for sure. I've really liked how they've used him. Mostly throughout the year, I think he's been solid for them, but especially in the bubble, they're really kind of letting his ancillary talents shine. You know, he's obviously someone who, you know, he's primarily used as a floor spacer, but he's a pretty talented passer for a big man. Can do a lot of incredible things. I think he had one play today, or maybe it was last game, where he flung a pass behind, not behind his back, but like with his back to Frank Kaminsky from the baseline to the top of the key or the wing for 3. Can just do a lot of really impressive things as a passer. And so I like this role where he's getting to handle the ball a little more, facilitate from the elbows. The Suns obviously love running stuff from the elbows offensively. So I've really liked kind of how they used him, and you can tell his role's expanding. They're using him more as a backup center. You know, Frank Kaminsky's minutes are diminishing, it seems, recently. I can't recall exactly how many minutes he played against the Sixers, but I know he was getting around 10 minutes the first few games of the bubble, and that's diminished against the Heat and Thunder. So I really liked how they used Dario, and I think he's a better than given credit for interior defender, and I think you're seeing some of that when he's getting to play inside more rather than being thrust into these perimeter defense responsibility. That's definitely a weak point of his game.
Jackson, do you think that Dario should be a priority for the Suns this offseason to re-sign? He's a restricted free agent, a $5.1 million restricted tag. I think it'd be golden for the Suns if they can keep it on that tag. But if you sign him to maybe a multi-year deal, do you think that should be on the table for the Suns team to really help help expedite that bench?
Yeah, I think he's someone who, you know, I don't want to overpay for him, but I think if the price tag is within reason, I think the Suns would be prudent to kind of set kind of an upper end limit of how high they'll go and how many years they'll give Saric. But yeah, I think he's someone who makes a lot of sense. You know, Monty's offense is obviously Booker's the engine, but there's a lot of different guys who get chances to play on the ball at times. Ruby, obviously, but even see guys like McHale, Cam Johnson, facilitate in times, handle the ball. And Dario's made for that role at times. He's not someone who's going to be running a bunch of pick and rolls from the top of the key, but like I said, you let him make plays as a creator and passer at times. He's suited for that. So that in conjunction with his floor spacing, he's obviously not a great 3-point shooter, but he lets him fly at a pretty high volume given the amount of shots he takes on the whole. So he is someone that I definitely would prioritize, but I wouldn't want to go overboard for, because I don't think he isn't by any means the crux of the Suns making the playoffs next year or the next few years.
Yeah, very valid point there, Jackson. I wanted to hit on next DeAndre Ayton, too. He's been sort of up and down the last 3 or 4 games for the Suns. But he had a hot start in the bubble. He's averaged 15.6 points, 9.6 rebounds, tallied in a couple of assists and a block per game. Starting to expand his range from 3-2. What's been your assessment of Ayton so far in this Orlando bubble?
Yeah, you know, I've been pretty, I'd say, disappointed by Ayton. You know, I thought he was really, really good in that first game against the Wizards. You know, had a few lapses in terms of pick and roll defense, but was really good defensively overall. And even when he had those lapses, you saw him kind of learn in the moment and adjust his coverage and his positioning there. But since then, I just haven't really, you know, been been enthused by him. I thought he was okay against the Mavericks. I didn't think he was great. I thought he was better against the Clippers, but nothing special. The Pacers, I think, was probably his second best game in the bubble. I thought he was pretty good there, especially offensively, as a play finisher and shooting some of those turnarounds and mid-range jumpers. I know those jumpers are kind of a point of contention, but he was hitting them against the Pacers. So I thought that was an effective route for him offensively. But I've just been kind of disappointed by his engagement level and his focus defensively. I think he's settling too much for some of those jumpers at times. Barely getting to the free throw line. I don't know what his numbers are in terms of free throw rate, but every time I check the box score, it seems like he's not getting more than three or four a game. So I would say it's been mostly up and down. It's good to see him shooting more threes. He had a stretch. He didn't shoot any against the Thunder or Heat, but he shot two today, or two against the Sixers, excuse me. So I would say, there's some reason for long-term optimism, he's shooting more, but on the whole, I've been pretty underwhelmed by his performance, especially the way he started off so well against the Wizards.
Sports are in full swing right now, especially in the bubble for the Phoenix Suns, who are now 7-0. My bookie has up-to-the-minute odds on our favorite teams, and with the start of Major League Baseball, the start of the NBA bubble going on, it's never a better time to start playing. With my bookie, it's easy. You bet, you win, they pay. Feeling good about your team's chances this year? Be sure to check out MyBookie's World Series future bets. The link shows you believe in your squad betting on them before the season's even begun. But why stop with baseball? Smart bettors are always looking towards the future, and in this case, it means basketball, hockey, and football. MyBookie is already accepting bets on all your favorite NBA, NHL, and NFL games. There's never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting. Join today, and MyBookie will match your deposit 100%, plus they'll toss in a free $10 MLB future wager. All you have to do is enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. Remember, my bookie, the terms are simple. You bet, you win, they pay.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there, Jackson. And you look at today against Philadelphia, he had zero free throws once more. That's 9 total free throw attempts for 8 and 7 games in the bubble, which is just, I think, just really bad for a player like DeAndre. And you see Dario Saric, he has 24 total free throw attempts in the bubble so far. So just being aggressive around the rim, I think, is the next step for DeAndre. But that has to click sometime soon, Jackson. I had to ask you as well, how important is 2020, 2021 going to be for a player like DeAndre Ayton?
Yeah, I think kind of that third year is where you see a lot of guys break out. And obviously, Ayton took a huge step forward defensively this year, but kind of regressed offensively. I think his true shooting was down 4 or 5 points. He wasn't as good for mid-range. I don't think he was as good as a finisher. So, the goal would be reach those rookie year scoring numbers again and add that three-point shot consistently. It doesn't have to be shooting 5 or 6 a game or anything, but if you could take 3 a game and shoot 34% and, continue to grow defensively and, reach that finishing level that he had as his rookie year, then I think you'd be looking at a really optimistic long-term outlook with him. So, it's key. I don't think it's going to make a break in his season or anything, his long-term trajectory. I guess every trajectory is mostly long-term. But, I think it's an important season for him, and you really want to see him blend that offense and defense that have – he was really good offensively as a rookie, very good defensively as a sophomore, took a step forward. So I think that would be kind of the key is make that three-point volume a consistent thing and rediscover the finishing prowess he has as a rookie.
Yeah, I think for Ayton, it's going to be so important to see sort of a next step for him next year because the Suns have banked obviously a lot into him as far as equity goes. Against Philadelphia, for those wondering, at 8 points, 12 rebounds, 2 assists, and 4-10 shooting in 32 minutes today. And then Dario as well had 18 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and 7-9 shooting. So Dario did a lot of damage while Ayton was sort of just kind of going through the motions sometimes throughout the game against Philadelphia. Of course, it didn't matter in the end as the Suns won 130-117, but you want to see more engagement from DeAndre on both ends of the court right now. But let me ask you as well about a player that has sort of just taken the bubble by storm just because he came out of absolutely nowhere. He was signed with the Suns before the bubble even began. That's Cameron Payne. A player that was that flamed out of the NBA at one point, Jackson, sort of on his last stand here at the Phoenix Suns. He's averaged 10 points, 50% from three so far. He's given you 3 assists, 4 rebounds per game. Not turned the ball over much at all so far either. What do you think of Cam Payne? Do you think there's any chance, and that's a super small sample size here, but any chance that Cam Payne could be the Suns' backup point guard next year? I don't want to bank too much into the 7 games in the bubble so far, but he's done very well for himself.
Yeah, I think there's a chance that could be the case because – even though it's 7 games, it's the most important 7 games of the Suns season. And he's been pretty consistent. Yeah, he's been mostly consistent. He's the backup point guard has been a you know, kind of a weak point in the Suns rotation for most of the year. And you've seen that when Rubio's missed games, they've struggled for the most part to have that kind of secondary ball handler next to Booker. And so I think, yeah, there's a chance Payne is on the roster next year. But, yeah, he's been really steady, really impressive, better defensively than I kind of anticipated or I'd seen at previous stops in his career. And just kind of providing that necessary ball handling. You know, he's nothing credible, but he can shoot off the dribble a little bit. He can create for himself a little bit. You know, can kind of get the blinders at times as a passer, but generally making important reads and just, you know, facilitating the offense and the role they need. So I've been super impressed, and it's cool to see a guy like you mentioned who, you know, like he's kind of on their last legs for in terms of NBA future, really seizing the moment and helping a team potentially achieve its, you know, or break its playoff drought.
The other backup point guard, at least the other backup guard on this team, has done really well, and especially next to campaigns, been Javon Carter-Jackson. He hasn't done much offense. We had the huge game against the Miami Heat where he had 20 points. They don't win that game without Javon Carter hitting all those threes, as well as him being a pest defensively. Really, he's been like that ever throughout his career in West Virginia, too. What do you think of Javon Carter, and is he sort of just living up to the expectations you thought of when you saw him come out of West Virginia a couple of years ago?
Yeah, he's a guy that I was fairly optimistic about finding a role. I know it took some time. I know he was up and down this year with the Suns, but yeah, I've been impressed. Like, you know, there was that clip, I think it was against the Thunder, where he's hounding that guy full court, and I mean, really, you know, drain the shot clock for them. I've been impressed with a lot of his on ball defense. And, you know, he shot well from three. I don't know. I don't have the number exactly in front of me, but I think it's somewhere around 50% or 45%. From three, and he's shooting with a quick trigger. He's not shy about when the ball comes, he's open for three. He's going to let it fly, which is super key for floor spacing. So, yeah, I've just been impressed with kind of the tenacity he operates with, and that some of those on ball defense sequences. I think that's something the Suns kind of need. Not that they have lackadaisical players or anything, but that's just something, you know, you see like that, it kind of just a little kickstart for you, gets you going. So I feel like I'm talking to all these different basketball cliches today, but yeah, I've been encouraged with Carter and Payne for sure. Kind of give him some steady minutes off the bench. We already mentioned Saric. So when you get big minutes and key minutes from those three, in conjunction with a really, really nice starting five, it's not really difficult to understand why the Suns are 7-0 in the bubble at this point.
Yeah, Javon Carter, his 3-point percentage, Jackson, he's 13 of 24 so far, which goes to 54% in the bubble. And incredibly enough, looking at his numbers here, I didn't even realize this either. 18 assists to 1 turnover so far in the bubble for Javon Carter. He's been very steady-handed for the Suns team as far as playmaking goes. Steals in the blocks are, of course, going to be with Javon Carter, but he's still on the team right now in plus-minus at +68, too. So definitely making it a big impact on this team here. But I wanted to round things out on players where we talk about some general Suns thoughts here. The Florida general himself, Ricky Rubio, he's been sort of quiet offensively, but been +40% from three-point range so far in the bubble, 10 of 23 to 44%. Been a great shooter. I think the extra time off really helped the player like Rubio out too. Of course, he's a great facilitator, a great leader, but what do you think of Rubio so far in the bubble in his first year in Phoenix?
Yeah, I mean, Ricky, he just kicks butt, man. Like, I love watching him. I think he's someone who, you know, really hasn't quite gotten enough love from mainstream media for a long time. You know, he had these huge expectations coming out of Spain, drafted by the Timberwolves. And, you know, I just think, you know, people have kind of struggled to, you know, mix the expectations with the actual player he is. And he's been awesome for a long time, but he's been so key for the Suns. He's really, really good defender, gets over screens, rejects screens, is good off the ball. And like you mentioned, yeah, the decision-making is super key for the Suns, you know, when Booker is your offensive engine, you need that secondary creator or handler to be a really, really sound decision maker. And that's exactly what Rubio is. He loves to keep his dribble alive. He'll probe, he'll duck in between all these limbs in the paint and find a cutter, find a shooter, or throw up one of those kind of those wacky reverse layups. He's not a very good finisher, but you know, sometimes when the moment strikes, he'll find a way to score among the trees. So I just really like watching him play. I've long been a fan of him, but it's been cool to really see him flourish in this scenario, because he's just a really good basketball player, and I think you're really seeing the effects of something of Rubio and kind of the impact he can leave in the proper setting.
Yeah, and especially with playing a player Ricky Rubio next to a player like Devin Booker, I've loved the pairing in the bubble and throughout this year so far, Jackson. What's been your thoughts on that Rubio Booker pairing? Because I feel like compared to Utah Donovan Mitchell, I think just it feels like Rubio and Booker are just such a seamless fit together.
Yeah, they're great. You know, Booker, obviously, he has this defensive shortcomings. He's improved significantly over the last couple of years, but he's still someone who I would consider a negative even among guards. And Rubio, he's pretty strong for a guard. He can kind of handle those assignments against guards. Obviously, Mikal Bridges is going to handle the primary ball handler most of the time, but I think if a team has two really, really good guards or two really good offensive players, Rubio is someone who's proven to be able to kind of handle those situations and let Booker play off the ball and not be thrust into these high usage defensive possessions. So that's really worked well. Like I mentioned, he's kind of that caretaker role. He's an incredible playmaker and decision maker, which is what the Suns need next to Booker. And he can play off the ball, even though he's not a great shooter. I know in terms of kind of his volume and his release, a little slow, but he's shooting above, I think, 40% on catch and shoot threes this year. Is a really good screener, is a smart cutter. And when you get him kind of in these advantage situations, he's cutting into the open spots and then teams are collapsing on him. He's, like I mentioned, the awesome passing, the creativity, he can find the open man. So it's been a really, really good pairing. And, you know, obviously Booker's the guy you're watching every night for the Suns. You love watching Mikal play defense, but Rubio, I think, is someone that is really, I've kind of flocked toward watching every time I turn a Phoenix game on.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. And Rubio, like you mentioned, is so underrated. I feel like every game that Rubio does well, it goes under the radar just because he's not a guy who's a high, flashy scorer. He's not the pest defensively that player like you see that Patrick Beverley is, but he does all the smart stuff. And it shows in Pippen too, the advanced metric. I think Rubio, I think you tweeted Jax a couple days ago, he's like a top 20 player in PIPM so far this year, which is going to show you sort of the impact he's had on the Suns team overall. But I wanted to ask you a few general Suns questions before I let you go, Jax. Appreciate the time as always. What do you think of this Suns team moving forward? Even if the Suns don't make the playoffs here, if let's say Portland and Memphis both win on Thursday and the Suns still go home after being 8-0 if they beat Dallas on Thursday too, just what kind of a learning experience is it for this Phoenix Suns team that going to go into 2020, 2021 with a lot of momentum here where they could be a team that's really poised for a leap next year?
Yeah, I think this is huge. You know, most years in recent seasons, the Suns haven't really ended the year on a bright note. It seems like a lot of times Devin Booker's been banged up with a couple of injuries and the Suns play conservative, so he doesn't play the final 12 games of the year, whatever it is, and they're playing all these ragtag guys and, you know, they're just signing all these guys to 10-day contracts and whatnot. And this year, that's not the case. They're playing games that are simulating a playoff atmosphere. Every single game is crucial for them, and that's huge. And especially with this potentially really, really short offseason, regardless of whether they make the playoffs, that's awesome. You know, the season's gonna, you know, I think it's scheduled to start December 1 or something, and so I mean their season could end August 11th, and then you'd have three months basically, or 3.5 months until the new season starts, and that doesn't even include when training camp would ramp up and all that. So it'd be really key for them. And yeah, it's just that type of thing where young teams need to learn how to win. You know, again, it's such a cliche thing, but you see it every year. You see it with all these different winners. It took the Raptors a while, and there's kind of some different rosters on the team, rosters or iterations of that team. It took the Warriors a couple of playoff failures, you know, took LeBron a while. So young, you just need to kind of learn how to operate in these pressurized situations, and there you're getting a lot of opportunities with these Suns. The Suns are getting a lot of these opportunities with these close games.
Yeah, and that kind of building camaraderie and winning these close games in a playoff type environment, I think is going to do wonders for the Suns to move forward here, especially for a player like Devin Booker, who's been relishing this kind of opportunity for years now. But when you look at the Suns team overall, Jackson, you've kind of gone through the whole gamut here of the Suns roster. Ayton is a stalwart. You have Bridges, you have Booker, you have Rubio. Cam Johnson, if you want to throw him in there as your starting five next year. If they re-sign Aaron Baines as your backup center, you have him. You have Dario off the bench, too, if they bring him back. You have another player. Kelly Oubre is one guy I'll hit on in a second, Jackson, because I feel like he's a player who could really swing this if he wants to embrace that six-man role. But then you have Campaign, Javon Carter as your backup guards. Is there any pieces you'd really target for the Suns this offseason? Because there's really not much they have to do as far as on the margins here. Maybe improve that bench a little bit more. But what would you do here if you're in the Suns position?
Yeah, I mean, I think the free agent market is kind of an interesting situation, especially with maybe the cap going down because of some of the financial loss with the season being paused for so long. But yeah, I would probably try and find a better or more reliable backup guard fleet, I guess. You know, I think Carter and Payne have been really impressive in these abbreviated, you know, do or die situation games, but I would still try and find someone I can maybe trust more, a little more. A guy like Shabazz Napier, I think, is on the market. DJ Augustine might be a free agent too. So maybe those couple of guys that I might target if they don't, you know, extend outside the price range that you set for yourself. And then obviously hitting on the draft, you know, they're going to have a pick from anywhere from 12 to 16 or so. And they're going to be some options at wing or at guard that they could really kind of help solidify that long-term core. But it's tough because they could be a lot better team next year than they are this year and miss the playoffs because the West is incredible. You know, the Warriors are going to be healthy again. You know, knock on wood, the Pelicans are going to be healthy, you know, most likely with a full year of Zion. So I think really kind of making sure, figuring out what you want to do next year. If the goal is to make the playoffs, then yeah, sign some guys that you think can really contribute and be consistent off that bunch. Sign or draft the guy that you think fits best with the core of McHale, Booker, Ayton, and Cam Johnson, and really go. If you want to be a little more patient, which I probably wouldn't do considering how good Booker is, then, you know, maybe kind of, you know, go with campaign, go with Joan Carter, sign a guy who maybe takes a little more development time, or draft a guy who takes a little more development time. So that would be kind of the vision I would go with, but I do think there's a lot of really, really good basketball players in place here, and Phoenix has done well to kind of recover from some of those pretty lean years.
Last one I have for you, Jackson. Kelly Oubre, of course, has been an afterthought there at this bubble. He's been out with his knee injury, but the Suns team is playing so well. Cam Johnson's really taken that role and ran with it as the four. McHale, of course, is a stalwart in that starting lineup right now. Had a great game against Philadelphia, 24 points, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 8 of 10 from the field in 33 minutes. So a great McHale game that the Suns saw on Tuesday. But what do you think of Kelly Oubre and his future with the Suns team? Because I wouldn't mess with the starting lineup if I was in Monty Williams' position or James Jones' position, Jackson. But do you think Kelly Oubre should be back in the starting spot next year? Do you think he's even on this team next year? Will he embrace that six-man role? Like, that's a big, I think, offseason question for this team is, will Kelly Oubre be on this team? What kind of role will he be in?
Yeah, I would keep him on the bench. I think, you know, the Suns, while they do have a lot of nice pieces in place, they still need another creator. I would consider Rubio more of kind of a secondary ball handler and caretaker is the phrase I like to use. And Uber is a pretty good slasher. He can shoot off the dribble a little bit. He's willing to take threes. He's aggressive. He's fearless, kind of attacking the rim. And I think that's something that the second unit could benefit from in conjunction with a guy like Sharish, who is less of a creator, more of a distributor for others. I think that's a really nice duo there you could have to kind of continue, you know, whatever offensive flow you've developed with Booker in the starting lineup each game. So if he can embrace that, I don't know a lot about kind of his willingness or his unwillingness to do that in past years or some of the reports coming out maybe from the organization, but or whatever. But if he can embrace that, I think that would be the way to go about it. And ideally he can. I mean, it seems like he's really loved Phoenix and has really kind of embraced this situation that he's in since being traded there about a year and a half ago. So I think his creation and his slashing would make a lot of sense off the bench because that would be kind of the point of emphasis to shore up in the offseason for Phoenix.
Now, Jackson, before I let you go here, of course, there's one game left for the Suns and one game left for everyone else in this bubble. But what is your preferred playing game? Do you want to see Dame versus Book? I think that's what everyone wants at this point.
Yeah, I think that would be my game too. That's what I would want. I would want to see two games of it. So whatever scenario has it where I guess if Portland's in it, they're probably the 8 seed. So yeah, I would love to see. I'd love to see two games of Booker versus Dame Lillard. I think those are probably the two best players among these four teams still in it, and they've played the best so far. Those two teams. So I think you're kind of seeing the benefits of having the best player in this 8-9 seeding rivalry or, you know, battle among all these teams. So that's my preferred plan. I would love to see the Grizzlies too. I think seeing Ja would be fun because kind of getting a really high-profile rookie, some playoff experience, or at least playoff-type experience would be cool. It's a bummer that Jaren Jackson's injured. But, yeah, I would say, you know, the Portland-Phoenix game or the Portland-Phoenix games would be what I am most hoping for. But I would also welcome Memphis just on a lesser scale, I guess.
Always enjoy talking with you, Jack. So you can go follow him on Twitter at JackFrank_JJF. You can read his work as well over the Step Back and at Up Rocks. Jack, appreciate the time, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's fun. The Suns have been great in the bubble, and it's fun to talk about them. I hope I was easily digestible without too many stutters or stumbling through my phrases for your listeners.
No worries. I appreciate the time, and we'll be back with you guys tomorrow for our next episode.